WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. If you're going out to eat or shop today in Montgomery County, better wear a mask. The county is reinstating its indoor mask mandate today, now that there's substantial spread of COVID. Councilmember Hans Reimer.
Wearing masks indoors is almost always a very cost-less way to combat this pandemic.
You can take your mask off inside restaurants while you're eating or drinking. An indoor mask mandate goes into effect in Prince George's County tomorrow at 5 p.m. There is no statewide mask mandate in Maryland. With mask mandates back in place around the D.C. area, one group says enough is enough.
I think a lot of people in the club would agree it's a government overreach.
Gilbert Fielder with D.C. Young Republicans says they'll be meeting near the D.C. courts later today to protest the reinstituted face covering order.
We want it to be near, you know, the where, you know, the D.C. laws are made, right around Judiciary Square. There's a nice outdoor area for us all to gather.
The mask mandate went back in place a week ago with Mayor Bowser announcing,
"We will continue to do what is necessary to keep D.C. safe."
Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
The district starts its new push to get 12 to 17-year-olds vaccinated today. Kids who get the shot at three locations get a $51 Visa gift card. Some will get AirPods. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis not putting any new COVID restrictions in place in the Sunshine State.
DeSantis argues parents, not politicians or the CDC, should decide if their children should wear masks in school. But Florida's pandemic problems are worsening. State health officials report more than 134,000 new coronavirus cases over the last week, prompting reporters to ask President Biden about DeSantis' defiance on Thursday.
Governor, don't.
DeSantis shot back.
I guess I'm not surprised that Biden doesn't remember me. I guess the question is what else has he forgotten?
Fox's Mark Meredith. The attorney representing Governor Andrew Cuomo against multiple sexual harassment claims says he filed something asking for conduct reports from the New York Attorney General's office.
We asked him to do that because we had concerns, as people would in any circumstance like this, that there might be things that were inaccurate, there might be things that were not sufficiently thorough, there were things that might be included or excluded from the report that might be fair or unfair.
Paul Fishman says that would allow people whose conduct is questioned to respond before the information would be public. State Attorney General Letitia James stands by the 11 women who accused Cuomo of sexual harassment. A gymnastics teacher in Montgomery County is arrested after police say he sexually molested a student. Mark Samuel Yellick taught at Silver Star Gymnastics in Silver Spring and Dynamite Gymnastics also in Silver Spring. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Braves 8-4, an Olympic gold for the American men's basketball team. The U.S. held off France 87-82. Prince George's County native Kevin Durant scored 29 points. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
You will find some slow-going traffic in Virginia on 95 southbound between Dale City and Quantico, and again between Garrisonville and Quiet and the Centerport Parkway. And in Dulles, you will still find the crash activity on 28 northbound at Sterling Boulevard, and that is blocking the right lane. In the district, 16th Street is closed southbound between Military Road and Missouri Avenue due to road construction. And in Tacoma Park, keep in mind that a portion of the Sligo Creek Parkway is closed between Old Carroll Avenue and University Boulevard for weekend social distance recreation. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clouds be on the increase today and temperatures a little bit cooler for the start of the weekend. Showers, they'll be possible as well. I think starting as early as the early afternoon hours, probably right after noon today, particularly I-95 and points south and east. The heaviest rain, southern Maryland and across the bay towards the eastern shore. Highs today, again in the lower 80s. Later on tonight, we'll go back in the 70s under partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy, warmer, still humid on your Sunday. Highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis, on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday Morning Update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi, busy week at the White House. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, and that's accurate. Gizzi was indeed busy.
A lot going on. Interesting back and forth between the Florida governor and the president of the United States. What's the latest at week's end?
This is a very rich debate on the role of the government in masking policy or the final steps in the COVID-19 controversy. The administration, of course, wants to leave the masking up to state and local governments. And in Florida, at least, one governor is standing in the way with this. He's not imposing masks on anyone, although many localities have insisted that masks go on. This has all led to a clash between Biden and Governor DeSantis, setting the stages, perhaps, for what could be a 2024 presidential contest. It's no secret that Ron DeSantis would like to be the Republican nominee for president, and he's already taking his shots at the incumbent. One other thing, Ron DeSantis is a governor who faces a major battle for re-election. The current situation is not helping him. Polls show that he's locked in a very close race with State Agriculture Commissioner Katie Freed, and that he barely leads current Democratic Congressman and former Republican Governor Charlie Crist by 3 percentage points. Therefore, what he does in relation to the masking policy and his jujitsu with the administration may well determine the fate of Ron DeSantis next year and whether he's a presidential candidate in 22.
Jobs numbers out on Friday, the president taking a victory lap. Was he a solo runner, or was this more of a relay race?
Many are saying it's a relay race. Of course, there are quite a few observers and scholars of the economy who say this is the leftover, the residual effect from the Trump across-the-board tax cut and the relief he provided business, the creation of jobs. Others say that the 943,000 jobs created last month that the president took credit for are a result simply of the nation coming out of the COVID hangover, that so many people quit jobs or businesses folded because of COVID. Now they're on the rebound, and that this would have happened no matter who was president. In any event, it is given the president something to talk about, and it's given people on the other side something to contradict.
A couple of primaries this week, win for not just the candidates.
In Ohio's 15th district, that's reliably Republican Columbus, and the 11th district, decidedly Democratic Cleveland, candidates who are close to the current and previous president emerge triumphant. In the 11th district, Chantel Brown, the Cuyahoga County Democratic chairman and a centrist in the mold of Joe Biden, won over former state senator Nina Turner, who had campaign assistance from Bernie Sanders and, you guessed it, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Most of the progressive political action committees weighed in for Turner, and that was enough for her to outraise opponent Brown. But Chantel Brown had a secret weapon. She had good old-fashioned shoe leather as the head of the Democratic machine, which is still strong in Cleveland, and she had the endorsement of outgoing Congresswoman Marcia Fudge's mother. Ms. Fudge, who resigned to become Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, could not get involved in the primary, but Mama did and gave her blessings to her daughter's good friend, Chantel. In the 15th district, Donald Trump made a strong endorsement of Ohio Coal Association President Mike Kerry, and he topped an 11-candidate field with 37% of the vote. It wasn't even close, and this is someone who's never held elective office before. The former president introduced him at his rally in Ohio in June, and he weighed in with a $400,000 independent expenditure from his political action committee. He needed to win this, having seen his favorite candidate lose in Texas's 6th district a week ago, and he got the win he needed.
Spending time this morning with Jim Trusty on the legal woes facing the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. But the question is, what about the political side of it? What are you hearing on the inside?
If the polls are accurate, and a just completed Marist poll showed that 59% of New York voters want Governor Cuomo to resign, while only 32% say he should finish out his term. If that's accurate and he does resign or he is impeached by the Empire State Legislature, then what happens is Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul becomes New York's first woman governor. She's 62 years old, former county clerk from Erie County, and a former one-term congresswoman. She has called the report of the Attorney General on Governor Cuomo's behavior, and I quote, repulsive, end of quote, but she won't say any more than that because she's a heartbeat away from the governorship. I mentioned the Attorney General. Letitia James, who completed the report, is likely to be the Democratic nominee for governor, but she may face a primary challenge from State Senator Alexandria Biaggi, the granddaughter of a late congressman from the Bronx and a former top aide to Hillary Clinton. It will be very interesting to watch the Democratic maneuvering. Meanwhile, Republicans and the Conservative Party of New York, which has the third line, have all settled on Congressman Lee Zeldin as their candidate. He's a decorated veteran. He will be only the third Jewish Republican to be a nominee for governor since 1934, and Republicans feel that the atmosphere around Cuomo's last stand makes taking the governorship a possibility.
The president of the AFL-CIO, Rich Trumka, died suddenly this week. And, John, we know the power he yields with the unions, but what about the power that he yielded in politics?
In politics, Rich Trumka was indeed a power broker. He liked to tell a story about how John L. Lewis, the first president of the United Mine Workers, his childhood hero and someone he followed as head of the UMW, would endorse Republicans as well as Democrats. Rich Trumka himself was not like his hero. He was a friend of Presidents Clinton, Obama, and Biden, and a frequent visitor to the White House. He tried to end the secret ballot in union elections, which brought him in clashes with fellow Democrats around the country. And he was someone who never forgot a clash or opposition from someone, and he owed people. I remember vividly when Governor Scott Walker ended collective bargaining in Wisconsin, and it was Trumka and the AFL-CIO that tried to recall him. When he ran for re-election, Rich Trumka called him public enemy number one and went after him. I would say from my own point of view, he was someone I thoroughly enjoyed asking questions to when he sat down at the annual Labor Day press breakfast to the Christian Science Monitor. He was an absolute delight to talk to, who could share stories about how much he liked Sylvester Stallone's portrayal of a union boss in the movie Fist, or about how much he loved his three grandchildren. They were with him when he died on a camping trip. Rich Trumka, someone to really remember, an American original, and a lord of labor.
John Gizzi, the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com. John, as always, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure and never boring.
And you can follow John on Twitter at John Gizzi. 717, the Saturday morning update. Next up, we'll talk with Kayla Epstein at Insider. Very interesting article that she wrote on 11 rising stars, women in the Republican Party, women to look at for 2022. That's next. But first, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray's there this morning.
In Centerville, watch out for an accident now on westbound 66 at Route 28, blocking the left lane that is causing slow traffic. Also, there is still crash activity northbound on 28 at Sterling Boulevard in Dulles, blocking the right lane. And watch out for slow-going traffic right now in Virginia on 95 southbound from Dale City, headed towards Quantico. And it again is slowing down right now between Garrisonville, Aquia, and the Centerport Parkway. In the district, you will find some long-term construction on New York Avenue between the 3rd Street Tunnel and 1st Street. Watch out for lane closures in each direction. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clouds beyond the increase today and temperatures a little bit cooler for the start of the weekend. Showers, they'll be possible as well. I think starting as early as the early afternoon hours, probably right after noon today, particularly I-95 and points south and east. The heaviest rain, southern Maryland and across the bay towards the eastern shore. Highs today, again in the lower 80s. Later on tonight, we'll go back in the 70s under partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy, warmer, still humid on your Sunday. Highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
69 degrees, 719, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
It's great to be back in the DMV. The Dan Bongino Show, weekdays from noon to 3 on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and scrolling through Insider recently, I came across an article. The topic and the headline, 11 Republican Women to Watch in 2022. It was authored by Kayla Epstein. She is a politics reporter at Insider. She joins us this morning. And Kayla, great to have you with us on the Saturday morning update.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You laid out some very interesting statistics in terms of the number of women on Capitol Hill that are Democrats, the number that are Republicans. And then you look at some of the up-and-comers that we'll be watching for 2022. So first off, tell us a little bit about the current status and the history of the parties.
Sure. So when it comes to women in elected office, and for the sake of this conversation, we can talk particularly about Congress and governor's offices. But historically, men have wildly outnumbered women when it came to representation in Congress and the governor's mansions across the country. And for the last several decades, female candidates from both parties have been making gains, but historically, Democrats have been stronger, and that's because they have more infrastructure, they've historically been more willing to talk about the gender gap in politics. And so we have a point now where there are 104 Democratic women currently serving in both chambers of Congress, and Republicans have just 39. During the 2018 midterms, Democrats elected a historic number of women to office. There were Republican women elected as well, but it was overwhelmingly Democratic. And I think that made a lot of Republicans wake up and say, okay, women are winning elections. Clearly, we need to run more female candidates. And there's a lot of Republican strategists who have been saying this for decades. But in the 2020 election cycle, Republicans really redoubled their efforts to start closing that gender gap between the two parties. They elected many more women to the House of Representatives than they had in 2018, and that helped them make major gains on Democrats and steal some seats back. And so in 2022, Republicans are even more hopeful that they will elect more female candidates. There's more investment and organization behind them. And so there are several notable candidates that are going to be running in this cycle, and we are starting to get the inklings that they might be in some pretty high-profile races.
You list 11 Republican women in this article, and we don't have time to talk about all of them, but take us through some of the more interesting candidates, because there are some diverse backgrounds and very interesting situations here.
So these are 11 candidates that have declared. It's early in the cycle, and so we're probably going to get a lot more women declaring they're going to run for office. But right now, we already have some bold-faced names. One of them, of course, probably the highest-profile Republican woman who's going to run is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who is President Trump's former White House press secretary. She had been making possible, hints that she was going to run for office after she left the White House. And lo and behold, she did declare in January of this year that she was going to run for governor of Arkansas, a seat actually held by her father. So she is a very prominent person from Trump's orbit. She will likely have the backing of that particular establishment, and she's a famous boldface name. So that governor's race is going to be very interesting to watch just because of how high profile she was within the Republican Party and the Trump administration. Another primary that you're probably going to hear a lot about is the primary for the Alabama Senate seat that is being vacated by Richard Shelby, a Republican. One of the people in that race is a Trump loyalist named Congressman Mo Brooks, who very loyal to the president, very controversial. But another person who is running is Katie Britt, and she is Senator Shelby's former chief of staff, so a very high-level position within his office. She is running for her old boss's seat. That race is probably going to become a sort of test case for the power of a post-presidency Trump endorsement, since Trump is backing Brooks. But it looks like Katie Britt is going to be going for her old boss's seat as hard as she can, so pay attention to that primary. There's a couple really interesting House races going on as well. You have Esther Joy King, who is a member of the U.S. Army's JAG Corps. She actually is running for a seat in Illinois being vacated by a Democrat, Sherry Bustos. But that seat, even though it's occupied by a Democrat, tilts kind of conservative, and so it might be an opportunity for Republicans to pick up the seat. And she has the backing already of VUPAC, which is a prominent organization dedicated to electing Republican women. And then the last one I'll mention is another attempt at a Republican pickup. It is Jen Kiggins, who is a Navy veteran running in a Virginia district that the Democrats captured in 2018. She was a member of the State House, and she is going to be one of, I think at least, one of the high-profile attempts to recapture a seat that Republicans had previously lost a couple of cycles ago. So pay attention to that race.
You also mentioned Monica de la Cruz Hernandez, who is a small business owner in Texas. She's run before, and when you have run and lost, when you come back a second time, there might be some skepticism. But why now?
Right. So Monica de la Cruz Hernandez, she very narrowly lost a race in Texas's 15th congressional district back in 2020, and Democrats were kind of surprised by how close it was. So she and several other Republican women who lost last time are actually running again. And if you talk to people who work to get more women elected to Congress, what they'll say is actually it's a really encouraging sign to see women trying again after they've lost one race. They come back with more experience, and this is for both parties. They come back with more experience, they're set on their race, and they have a higher chance of winning. So it's encouraging to see that both Democrats and Republicans, their female candidates try after a failure, because there are more favorable conditions for Republicans this time around. Joe Biden is in the White House. Midterm elections during a president's first term tend to go against him. And so perhaps Monica de la Cruz Hernandez might be facing more favorable winds this time around than she did in 2020.
Kayla Epstein, politics reporter at Insider. Kayla, thank you very much. And if you'd like to check out Kayla's article, it's at insider.com, 11 Republican Women to Watch in 2022. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
7:26, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. If you're going inside a public place in Montgomery County, you'll need to mask up. The indoor mask mandate goes back into effect today now that there's substantial spread of COVID. Councilmember Will Juando.
There's also another variable, which is the Delta variant. Right. And that it is, according to Dr. Fauci, I think I read or heard him say the other day, much more transmissible if it breaks, in vaccinated people, if there is a breakthrough infection.
The mask mandate will automatically end if the county goes back to moderate or low spread. The Delta variant is now the most common type of COVID in Virginia. The Department of Health says there's been a 45% increase in confirmed cases of the Delta variant since the week of June 19th. Another Saturday session for the Senate as lawmakers try to push through a $1 trillion infrastructure bill.
Senate leaders could lock in a deal allowing for a vote on final passage of a bipartisan infrastructure bill later today. Without an agreement, the Senate would still take a procedural vote today to end the debate, a motion that requires a 60-vote majority and would set up final passage for early next week. Some Republicans are raising deficit concerns after a Congressional Budget Office assessment, but negotiators argue the bill is fully paid for, in part by economic growth expected with the legislation. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
WMAL Sports. The Nats fell to the Braves in Olympic gold for the American men's basketball team. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Watch out for an accident right now on westbound 66 at Route 28 in Centerville, blocking the left lane, and on 95 southbound before the Springfield-Franconia exit. Two lanes blocked with an accident there, and delays continue on 95 southbound from Dumfries towards the Centerport Parkway. And also, you will still find accident activity northbound on 28 at Sterling Boulevard in the right lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Welcome to the weekend on this Saturday. Expect mostly cloudy skies and the chance for a few showers, particularly during the afternoon and evening along and east of I-95. Now, the heaviest rain expected to be closer to southern Maryland and across the bay towards the eastern shore. I think the highest probability for rain will be later on this evening. A few showers lingering tonight, lows back in the 60s to near 70 degrees, partly cloudy, warmer and muggy on Sunday, high temperatures near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis, on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
7:36, Saturday morning update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every week. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Hey, Rick, always great to join you. Thanks for having me.
You know, the situation at the border just continues to worsen, even though the Biden administration would try and have us believe things are improving. As an example, a van carrying 29 undocumented migrants, they crashed into a utility pole on a Texas highway. 10 were killed, including the driver. Now, this is a van that we're all familiar with. It's typically to carry 15 passengers. There were 29 passengers in this van. And that's just an example of what's going on. And when you look at the images, Tony, of the facilities and the overcrowding, the cramped conditions, then you have the spread of COVID-19. McAllen, Texas, reporting that over 7,000 cases of COVID-19 among undocumented migrants since February. So it's a crisis that is worsening, especially with COVID-19 and the Delta variant now.
So, yeah, let's kind of break this down to the two pieces which you've outlined clearly. The border's not secure, and despite what the Biden administration's continue to say, there's no indications it's going to end anytime soon, this rush across the border. Because of that, you have increased criminal activity that includes coyotes, drug runners. It's all going on. And that's why Governor Abbott and others are very upset about the outcome. And then, of course, you now have the Delta variant that the Biden administration is saying is a great threat to everyone. I'm not a doctor, not a virologist, don't want to comment on the truth or whatever it is regarding what the variant is, but if it is a threat, if we accept that on face value, we know for a fact that these illegal immigrants, these migrants, are carrying it across the border in great, great numbers. And we're talking about, some of these facilities, Rick, become essentially hothouses for the virus to basically propagate. We're talking about 10,000 immigrants, migrants, illegal aliens, whatever you want to call them, being tested positive for COVID and being held in these compact facilities where everybody else gets sick. So they're not discouraging people to come across, so they come across. And once they're here, they essentially put them in incubators for it to spread, and then they move them around the country. So the Biden administration itself has become the biggest spreader of this variant, if it's really that bad. It's hugely bad by the fact that the Biden administration seems to be almost sending it out across the nation to propagate. And so this is, in my judgment, a major national security issue, one that's not being reported at all by virtually any media. And I don't know why, because if you just simply look at the facts, Rick, look at what they're doing, this is a grave risk to the lives of a lot of citizens within the United States. And for goodness sake, if you really are worried about COVID, you should seal the border and stop immediately allowing these folks to move across the country and spread the virus all over.
Well, that's a critically important point that you're making, and that is it's not limited to Texas.
That's right.
it's not limited to these centers. The migrants who have COVID end up on buses.
Exactly.
They're trafficking around the country on the buses. They'll be flown around the country by the, the Department of Homeland Security. This can affect everybody in 50 states.
Right. And it makes no sense if you look at this simply from the national security and policy perspective. It's a very dangerous thing to be doing. So either the virus is not as serious as it's portraying it to be, or they're simply acting in such a way to with reckless disregard to the public health of every citizen in the United States. It's one or the other. I don't know which it is. But no matter what you think, Rick, they are allowing these migrants to come across and then spread this virus all over the nation. And that's well documented.
All right. One of the big topics of debate is whether an employer can require you to be vaccinated. And there is the debate, of course, around the military and should the military be forced to be vaccinated. And when I sent you a note last night on this, you pointed out an event in 2003. So give us a historical perspective on all of this.
So let me just start with a quote from Judge Emmett Sullivan. He's been in the news, as you might recall. Sullivan wrote in 2003, the women and men of our armed forces put their lives on the line every day to preserve and safeguard the freedoms of all Americans and cherish that the Americans cherish and enjoy. Absent of informed consent or presidential waiver, the United States cannot demand that military members of the armed forces serve as guinea pigs for an experimental drug. That's what he said. And this was in reference to something called anthrax, the anthrax drug. So what's at stake here, obviously, is at this point, the COVID vaccine of all varieties are still experimental. So if Joe Biden chooses to push forward with this, I forecast that you're going to see multiple suits, to include one, like here with Emmett Sullivan back in 2003, where someone sues the Department of Defense. And yes, the president can essentially have a presidential waiver that overrides all these consents for the military. With that said, he cannot force employees to do it. Employers to do it. The employers can make life miserable for people by making them do constant testing, wearing masks and things like that. So it's a bit different in the private sector. But the overlap here, Rick, between the private sector and the military is that the litigation that will come from civilians being forced to do it, government civilians, GS employees, in the military is litigation. And the litigation is going to force the hand of a lot of folks to show the data behind what's going on. And that was one of the issues at the heart of the litigation of the anthrax inoculations, the anthrax vaccines, because there were huge side effects that were initially not being reported by DOD that did impact on readiness and health of individuals. I know of at least two individuals who died from anthrax vaccinations from enlarged hearts. So all I'm saying here is that if the president and the administration decides to go forward to force the military members to do it, apparently they can by presidential waiver or decree, it's going to result in huge litigation. And the side effect, if there's a positive side effect of that, is probably having to force the FDA to give up a lot of data that they've otherwise not provided so far regarding the testing of the COVID, the three different types of COVID vaccinations.
Now, you host the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org, and I know you've spent some time recently with Gordon Chang on the podcast.
Yeah.
And what's front and center this week?
Well, we actually did a new one where we talk about Wendy Sherman and the recycling of failure. A lot of folks don't remember that Wendy Sherman was one of the negotiators on the initial North Korean negotiations back in the 90s. Where they, I don't know if you remember, the Clinton administration had convinced the North Koreans to not take up nuclear weapons. We all know how that worked out. Well, Ms. Sherman was part of that. She's been part of the other failures across the board. So our latest one is how this administration is taking the past failures and recycling them. So we all lay it out in great fact in our latest Thought to Action. So I think a lot of people will learn a lot about how awful the Biden foreign policy is based on the fact they've taken the worst and they've put it back in the forefront. So there you go.
And you will find that at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you as always.
Yep. Hey, thank you, Rick.
7:45, Saturday morning update, WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Virginia, you will still find accident activity on 95 southbound just before the Springfield-Franconia exit, and that has a left lane block. Traffic is jammed from the Beltway. More delays southbound continuing from Dumfries Road all the way down to the Centerport Parkway. And on 66 westbound at Route 28 in Centerville, you will still find an incident in the left lane. Earlier accident on northbound 28 at Sterling Boulevard in Dulles has been cleared away. On the freeway eastbound near the 3rd Street Tunnel, watch out for various lane closures with a work zone. Now from GarageJoyRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clouds be on the increase today, and temperatures a little bit cooler for the start of the weekend. Showers, they'll be possible as well, I think starting as early as the early afternoon hours, probably right after noon today, particularly I-95 and Point South and East. The heaviest rain, southern Maryland and across the bay towards the eastern shore. Highs today, again in the lower 80s. Later on tonight, we'll go back in the 70s under partly cloudy skies. Partly cloudy, warmer, still humid on your Sunday, highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
7:49 Saturday morning update, WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And she was the Deputy National Security Advisor in the White House with President Trump. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
And I know that you have been in Florida recently with your latest addition to the family, your grandson, Robbie. But you're on the ground, and you are in a state where Governor DeSantis has been attacked by the president and the media over COVID-19 and the growing numbers of COVID-19, the Delta variant around the country. But they seem to be focusing quite heavily on Florida. You're on the ground there. What's your perspective on how this is playing out?
Well, first of all, President Biden said he couldn't remember DeSantis's name. Governor who? He said. And then DeSantis kind of turned it around and said, well, he doesn't remember a lot of stuff. But here's the point, that DeSantis has come back, and this is why he's a politician as well as a very good administrator of government, but he's a politician the Democrats better worry about, because in the criticism of him, now that the COVID numbers have started climbing in Florida, of the Delta variant, among others, and the criticism of DeSantis is that he's not mandating masks, he's not mandating vaccines, he's got the free state of Florida, he kept the economy open, he didn't lock things down. His comeback is, wait a minute, you better fix the border, because President Biden, you've kept an open border. And because of the open border, people from 50 countries are coming in, and they're carrying the COVID bot. They're carrying lots of stuff, including the Indian variant and other variants yet to come. And the primary destination of most of these illegals is Florida, and you're busing them there. And so the Democrats, I think, in just a sort of blatantly ruthless political strategy, they're leaving the border open. They're planning to take the illegals anywhere they want to go. All they have to do is say, I want to go this state or that state. They get a bus ticket or they get put on a plane, and they get sent there. A lot of them are coming to Florida. And Governor DeSantis has said, look, my problem is that you're not telling me you're bringing these people to my state. You're charging me for it later after the fact. And they're coming, and they may be spreading the variant. We have no way of getting these people on the grid. And it's a very potent argument that I think DeSantis is making. The problem of the COVID variant, of the India Delta variant in Florida, isn't that big a deal. It's primarily, again, remember, it's an older population, and so you have to sort of adjust the population numbers to that. It's hard to compare apples to oranges of other states, but he remains extremely popular. And then yesterday he announced that he will ban any mask mandates in the state, but individual schools may choose. You have to wear a mask, you don't have to wear a mask. And so he said, look, any family is uncomfortable with that. I think the family should make the decision, not the government. And I'll make sure you get school vouchers. And the Department of Education last night in Florida announced that any family that is unhappy, either direction, of the mask mandates of their schools can take their child out and take and send their child to any school they want. So again, I think that not only is it smart policy, but it's very smart politics.
The discussion among the pundits is often that the influx of the migrants will ultimately swell the voter rolls for Democrats in many states around the country, including the red states. And there's a lot of talk about that. And I guess my question would be, if that is in the back of their minds, is there any problem with that strategy for the Democrats?
Yeah, it'll backfire. Because a lot of the migrants who they're letting in are families. They're Hispanic families. And if you look at the voting trends, especially in states like Florida, the voting trend is that Hispanic families are small businessmen. And, you know, they don't go to work at think tanks. They don't have, you know, big government jobs with guaranteed paychecks and health care benefits. They're small businesses. And those are the people, small businesses are the ones who first migrated to Trump and are continuing to vote Republican. The other thing is, again, this is politics, not necessarily policy. In Florida, there's a very large Hispanic population, a large Cuban population, and it's enough to swing the vote of Florida. And nobody wins the White House without winning Florida as well. And the fact that the Biden administration turned its back on Cubans demanding democracy and sided with the brutal dictatorship of a communist government, I never thought I'd live to see the day that the United States supported communist dictatorships, evil, cruel communist dictatorships, against the will of the majority of the people, when all they were asking for us to turn on the internet for them, which we could have done so easily. Anyway, I think that all that means that Biden and the Democrats are not going to be able to win in 2024. The other thing it's worth fashioning forward to is their vice president.
Well, I was going to ask you about Vice President Harris, because she came up with the strategy to solve the border problem, which was to pump a lot of money into Central America, not necessarily securing the border with any immediacy, and that has not gone over well. There's dysfunction in her office, has been reported by a number of different media outlets, not just the conservative ones. So there are problems there for the potential 2024 presidential candidate.
The pumping all that money into Central America, all that's managed to do is pump a lot of money into the bank accounts of Central American dictators. It hasn't gotten to the people, and it never has, and never will. But let's fast forward. Let's, again, stay on this political track, not policy, but politics. 2023, the Democrats are now wholly going to be responsible. They can't continue to blame Trump. They'll be responsible for just a disastrous economy, because as the sugar high of government spending wears off, and it's starting to wear off already, we will have very high inflation, which has already started happening. We will have a stagnant economy, no economic growth. We will have very high unemployment, in large part because of their policies. We'll have a staggering deficit, which is going to be pushed around by China, by Russia, and even Iran. And who's the standard bearer for the Democrats in 2024? I don't think anyone really assumes that it's still going to be Joe Biden. It's going to be Kamala Harris. And she's been the one who's been responsible for the biggest failures of their administration. And she's probably the most unpopular woman in America. I mean, I say this as a woman who really wants to see women succeed and really wants to see a woman president. But I don't want to get there just on gender qualification. I want to get there in qualification. And the Democrats took Kamala Harris for rank political reasons, but now they can't get rid of her. She's going to be their 2024 presidential candidate and standard bearer. They're losing the Hispanic vote, particularly small business Hispanics, and it's their open border policies. And their open border policy in the end is that they're fighting Democrats. Democrats states, they're not putting the illegals, and they're putting them in the red states in the South, hoping that those states then turn blue, vote for Democrats, because Hispanics who will vote Democrat because they're going to give these people amnesty and benefits. But they're letting in the very people who will turn out to vote Republican. So in the end, the last laugh will be on them. Kamala Harris is going to lose in the very states that they thought she would win in.
KT McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's about going to wrap it up for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the news at 8.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.